On this episode of The Big Number, we react to the Clippers sending Chris Paul home in the early hours of Wednesday morning. Why would the Clippers do this to the best player in their franchise history? And what's next for CP3? That's coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, we're joined by your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Have you sent me home? Is that why I'm home now? Have, in the middle of the night, on the way to the recording, you sent me home?
Yeah, you were in Atlanta, but look, it's too hot in Hotlanta right now, so you got to go home, Dan. I had to send you home.
It's getting real hot from the sound of things. It's pretty wild. But now I am here, Tom, and I'm ready to put up some numbers. So hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
This week's big number is zero. That's the number of championships that the Los Angeles Clippers organization, the franchise, has won in its 56-year history. Dan, zero championships. And also, I'll add on to this, zero is also the number of finals appearances by the Los Angeles Clippers in its 55-year history, going on 56 years. Dan, zero finals appearances. There's only five franchises in the NBA that have never been to the NBA finals. That's the Clippers, the Hornets, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies, and the Timberwolves. That's five franchises. And guess which one has the longest championship drought? That would be the Clippers, right?
Yeah.
55 years is actually, if you stacked New Orleans and Memphis on top of each other in their championship droughts or their finals droughts, not even getting to the NBA finals, the Clippers have yet more years without getting to the NBA finals than some of those other teams. So combined. So the Clippers entering today is already a story of futility as a franchise, and they seemed to be steering in the right direction. This logo with the giant boat had been steering in the right direction when Steve Ballmer took over for Donald Sterling and Chris Paul was part of the organization and Lob City was happening. And like, hey, this thing, the Clippers, that seemed to be the beacon of mediocrity and futility, is now trending in the right direction. Well, Dan, woke up on Wednesday morning with some news. A new chapter of Clippers futility is upon us because we got word that Chris Paul had been sent home by the Clippers. And that is important because he had just done this retirement announcement a couple weeks ago. They had a game here in Charlotte. And coming back home to North Carolina, where he grew up in Winston-Salem, just about an hour away from the Charlotte Hornets. And he said, hey, this is going to be my final year. And the Clippers on Wednesday morning decided, yeah, you're going home. We're cutting ties with you. So that whole retirement idea, we're not on board with that. And we're willing to just send you home, even though your contract is guaranteed for the full season. So it's kind of in limbo right now, what the Clippers are going to do with Chris Paul. But he announced via his Instagram with a little Instagram story saying, well, I just got sent home. Deuces. Dan, I did not see this coming, considering the retirement announcement a couple of weeks ago. And the Clippers did this whole video, like, congratulations on announcing your final season. And they had it on the Intuit Dome big screens like a week ago. Dan, what is going on, man?
Well, you're right that this marks a notable addition to this latest chapter of Clippers futility, but I think we got to unwind it a little bit and say, like, the futility's been all around us, right? You know, this organization has been surrounded in it this season. We did an episode of The Big Number this summer about the Clippers roster and about the additions they'd made, the moves they'd made to add depth to the roster, bringing in a lot of veteran talent and veteran, like, capital V veteran. This was going to be the oldest roster perhaps in NBA history. And the bet was all these guys who are older, Chris Paul, Brooke Lopez, alongside James Harden, alongside Kawhi Leonard. Yes, they are older. They're on the wrong side of 30, but they were just productive players in their most recent stop, and we're going to be able to manage their minutes. We're going to be able to manage their workload. And this will allow us to be able to keep everybody's minutes down and get the most productive versions of them on the floor. And what happened was everybody got old real fast at the same time, basically, or at least among those incoming guys. Brook Lopez has looked like a shell of himself. Chris Paul has looked like a shell of himself. I think he's like 2.9 points per game, shooting 32% from the floor in 14 minutes a game. And he's a 40-year-old, 6-foot point guard. Like, it was going to happen for him, but that it happened like that, and that it happened for Brook Lopez like that. The house of cards that this was all built on tumbled pretty quickly. And we are talking about a team that went on this road trip. I think they started the season 3-2 and then have lost 14 of their last 16 games. So the vibes are already bad on court. You might have heard there was some concerns off the court with respect to Kawhi Leonard and whether or not he planted trees and whether or not the deal for him to do so represented a means of circumventing the salary cap. That was something that the NBA was going to be investigating. That's kind of been a thrumming undercurrent of all the bad vibes.
And there's also a separate lawsuit involving a former employee, Randy Shelton, who alleges tampering and all sorts of stuff, that they're facing that lawsuit as well. So it's the league investigation, and then there's a separate Pablo Torre finds out investigation that has Tyronn Lue allegedly at the scene of a rigged poker game that he did not, according to his reporting, participate in or play in. But it's just all of these stories are a cloud over this franchise, even to begin the season, and then they go into this slide. Like you pointed out, these guys got old real fast, but who among us could have seen that they would sign Brook Lopez late into his 30s, Chris Paul, 40 years old, Bradley Beal is out for the season with the injury, and it's just, and Kawhi Leonard's been out for half the season with his injuries. And so this is kind of what they signed up for, is when you sign players of this age, you have to be prepared for their bodies to break down. And like all of those things, the roster additions, the futility of and the controversy off the floor, they're sitting here at 5-16 as we're recording this. They've lost six straight games with Kawhi and James Harden in uniform. I'm going to repeat that. This isn't a case of Kawhi Leonard has been out, so they're just losing a whole bunch of games. With James Harden and Kawhi, they've lost six straight games. Okay? And it's shocking to come to this point where they've decided that they're parting ways with Chris Paul, considering what we heard from Lawrence Frank, the president of basketball operations, what he said when they signed Chris Paul in the offseason, in their media availability with Lawrence Frank. I want, if we can pull it up here, what Lawrence Frank said to the media in his opening statement about what Chris Paul brings to the organization this offseason when they made the signing.
Good to see everyone again. Given that we signed Chris yesterday, I wanted to make myself available for any questions. We talked a bit Saturday about this roster spot and the direction we might go. Chris was a natural fit. His roots with the organization are deep and meaningful. He obviously played a tremendous role in the upward trajectory of the franchise. He wanted to return to the Clippers, and we wanted the same, as long as it made sense with our current roster. And it does.
Natural fit. Something went sideways. We're hearing reports from Chris Haynes and Shams Charania about what went down overnight, or what has been going down between the Clippers and Chris Paul. And we're seeing from Chris Haynes' reporting that Chris Paul had requested a meeting with Tyronn Lue recently, and Tyronn Lue did not want to speak with him, according to Chris Haynes' reporting. Shams Charania also this morning saying that that basically they hadn't been talking for weeks. And here's the report, Chris Haynes: weeks ago, Chris Paul requested to have a meeting with Tyronn Lue to discuss allegations of being a negative presence on the team. Lue refused to meet with him. Lawrence Frank traveled to Atlanta to deliver news of parting ways. Paul desired final season to be with the Clippers. It all seemed very clumsy, the whole retirement announcement, because the Clippers didn't really come in at the same time of that announcement. It almost seemed like Chris Paul went rogue and was like, I'm just going to announce this, even if my team isn't a part of this announcement. And then later they came out with the video. And if this has been swirling, this animosity between Chris Paul and the head coach has been swirling for weeks, according to Shams Charania, the leadership style clashed with the Clippers, and he had been vocal in holding management coaches and players accountable, which the team felt became disruptive. And they were not on speaking terms for several weeks. So, Dan, holding them accountable.
Yeah.
So he's just reading between the lines here. Kawhi Leonard's playing half the games. He's also tweeting out, or Chris Paul is posting on Instagram, a definition of Merriam-Webster's definition of leeway.
Yeah.
And now we have the report from Shams Charania that he was holding his teammates and people around him too accountable. Yeah.
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 I mean,
you know,
so
like, isn't that what a leader does?
Well, you'd think. It is not hard to imagine somebody whose entire career has been about, like, everything needs to be completely squared off and buttoned up and the most organized and regimented. And like, we do things in an orderly way that makes sense because that's the way we get things done. Like the way to win is to, you know, uncover, you know, turn every page, uncover or turn every stone, look for every advantage you possibly can. If you see a guy check into a game with his jersey untucked, let the ref know because that's a technical foul and that's a point for us. And so you've got somebody who has, you know, won throughout his career, every stop, every place he's gone. Now, never at the highest level, famously in Chris Paul's case, but perennial playoff teams, deep, you know, 50 plus wins, deep runs, turning teams that had been sort of scrambled and unserious into, you know, serious outfits. That somebody who has that career and that way of seeing things would go to a situation and say, stuff's not running the right way here. Like, and who knows better? I do. I'm somebody who has, I'm the point guard who organizes everything. And also I've seen it all and done it all over the course of my career in the league. Hey, you're not holding up your end of the bargain. And also who has the gravitas, the resume, the level of respect to be able to go to a championship winning head coach, to go to a top 75 player all time that's leading the way. If indeed, you know, Kawhi Leonard was part of that, to go to James Harden, former teammate, somebody that made the Western Conference Finals with, and be able to like call him on the carpet for what he's not doing on the defensive end of the floor. Like, who has the standing to do that? It's someone like Chris Paul. The flip side of that, and it's something that we'd heard a lot over the course of Chris Paul's career, is that can get real old real fast when you're the guy who's constantly being told he's doing everything wrong. And I also can imagine that being a difficult thing to hear from, as we mentioned, someone averaging 2.9 points per game and 14 minutes per game who is in and out of the rotation and isn't making the kind of impact that Chris Paul always has made. And I'm not saying that's to say Chris Paul is in the wrong here or is in the right or, you know, whatever. The more will be revealed, I imagine. We're already hearing some things about this and I imagine we're going to hear more. But this seems like a real oil and water type of mix. A natural fit at the time turned into something that seemed to not fit very comfortably at all and fit pretty awkwardly for a lot of the principals in Clipperland. And if you're going to make a decision about who goes, the guy on the minimum contract who's playing 14 minutes a game seems like it makes sense to do it that to do that. But the doing that to a guy who is one of the most important players in the history of your franchise, one of the greatest players in the history of the game, one of the most respected players of his generation, a week and a half after he announced he's going to retire in what has been like a homecoming retirement tour type of thing, that feels gnarly.
People are going to watch, man. People are going to talk around the league. This is the biggest story in the league right now by far, that the Clippers would do this to Chris Paul, who is the all-time leader, franchise leader in assists, who, if you care about such things, he's the all-time leader in win shares. There is no jersey retired for the Clippers. It's not hanging in the rafters. There's not a jersey up there. So if you were going to have a
zero
candidate, another zero. Zero. This week's big number is zero. That's the number of jerseys that the Clippers franchise has ever retired in its 56-year history. And you can imagine that Chris Paul would be candidate numero uno on that list. Or Blake Griffin, which brings me back to this point. Blake Griffin was a free agent back in 2017, and they brought him in, and they did this huge dog and pony show of, like, they had a maze. Zach Lowe had reported at the time they had this, like, maze with temporary walls, and he's walking around with his son, Blake Griffin, and seeing all these family albums and kind of like a museum of Blake Griffin's life. And then at the end of it, they kind of raised his jersey to the rafters and announced that he was going to have his jersey retired. And it was all this, like, very sentimental, tug at the heartstrings. Hey, we want you to be a lifelong Clipper. And Lee Jenkins, formerly of Sports Illustrated, now with the Clippers, had reported that in January 2018 that part of the message was, we want you to be a lifelong Clipper, and that's why you should sign here. Well, he did sign there for, what, 5-year contract? And then they promptly traded him to Detroit in that first season after that signing.
I'm sorry. It's not funny broadly. I'm reminded of the T-shirt. Do you remember the T-shirt?
Dude.
Where the Clippers put...
this is not Centel. This is not NBA Centel.
This is a real thing.
A real thing that happened. This was pre-Centel. Is there yes. like a before Centel?
Thank you very
Centel
much to our
BC?
Crack production staff. Yes, they made a T-shirt of pioneers, famed pioneers, including Mahatma Gandhi, Albert Einstein, President Barack Obama, Nelson Mandela, Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and Muhammad Ali. And they put Blake Griffin at the top of that graphic. And they had all of the employees that were there for that dog and pony show wear this T-shirt to emphasize the how transformative a figure for the past, present, and future Blake Griffin was. And that future, as it turns out, was pretty short-lived.
Yeah. A note on this. Is Blake Griffin still part of the organization?
No. He's got a different job now.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. JJ Redick, is he part of the organization?
No, he coaches the other LA team now.
DeAndre Jordan, did he stay with the organization? Has he been on them the whole time? No?
No. Famously, he wound up traveling around the league. They tried to keep him for a while. There was something about a chair blocking a door in free agency. But
and then he left in free agency to go to Dallas. And then
he did wind up
bunch
escaping
of
LA
stop.
Eventually. Yeah.
And Jamal Crawford isn't with the organization either. Matt Barnes not with the org. It's so weird. But Chris Paul was the only player on that Lob City, the golden years of the Clippers, that was still part of the organization, and they just sent him home packing. None of the players, the faces of the greatest moments in Clippers history, are still around the organization. That's another zero. And I think this is really interesting because they don't have a lot of history, positive energy to draw upon with the Clippers, and it seems like they've exiled or purposely sent them packing in the years after that. And JJ Redick is, like you pointed out, with the rival franchise in the Los Angeles Lakers, the head coach. And so it's just, how do you make enemies of all of your friends over the years? Steve Ballmer and Lawrence Frank are now sitting on a team that has, on pace, going to meet 30 wins below their expectation this season. That's Oof. Right. 30 wins below. They've underperformed this season on pace. Look at these numbers here. The most underachieving teams by preseason win-loss over-unders in Vegas. BetMGM numbers via the basketball reference database. The Clippers were projected to win 49.5. The over-under was 49.5. Right now, they're on pace for 19.5 wins. That difference is 30 wins. Underperformance. That is the largest, the most disappointing team in the NBA, the Clippers. And Lawrence Frank is like, look, I'm not blaming Chris Paul for our underperformance and our disappointing season so far, which was pointed out by a reporter in OKC, a David Letterman bit that he did. I don't know if we still have that pulled up here, but it was so good. It was such a great reference, the David Letterman one. Yeah, here it is.
That we should not blame Conan for what's going on.
Don't blame Conan.
Don't blame Conan for what's going on. And I said to myself, no one is blaming Conan. I was going to say,
no. So good. It's like no one was blaming Chris Paul. Like, it's not like we've been talking about how the defense has been terrible. Kawhi's been in and out of the lineup. It's just no one was blaming Chris Paul for this, and yet here he is. Look, I want to make one thing clear. So it's a disaster. So people are going to ask, what happens now for Chris Paul? And it's very tricky because he is not trade eligible until December 15th. Okay. They can't like save money really in a buyout, and they're right up against the first apron, which means that they can't really waive him and then add someone easily. And so I wanted to kind of point everyone to a few teams here that could be destinations for Chris Paul in a free agency scenario. Like, I want to put aside the whole trade Chris Paul idea, that concept, just because it's super tricky, and maybe this ends up in a waiver situation. Maybe they just decide to part ways and do a buyout. I don't know. It's not going to save them much money. But Dan, I wanted to kind of point to that whole Blake Griffin thing. You mentioned, where is he? Where's Blake Griffin working now?
He is with Amazon Prime with their NBA coverage.
Yeah. Okay. So, JJ Redick is the coach of the Lakers, and Chris Paul, Banana Boat, all that. They're buds with LeBron James. The Lakers, though, their 15th roster spot doesn't open until January 19th. Which, who are they playing right after January 19th? I'm just trying to figure this out. Okay, let me look at the schedule. Hold on. January 22nd, they play, oh, at Clippers on Amazon Prime. Dad, the Lakers' 15th roster spot opens up 3 days before the Lakers play at Intuit Dome, which is being broadcast on national air on Amazon Prime, of which Blake Griffin is an analyst. So I'm just putting that out there just so everyone keep their third eye open on this situation. If he's not traded anytime soon, the Lakers, they have an open roster spot, but according to Bobby Marks, because of the way the roster spots and the prorated contract for a minimum contract, they can't, based on the apron rules, sign anyone until January 19th, which is just coincidentally right before the Lakers play at Intuit Dome. So that's something interesting. The Houston Rockets, of course, Fred VanVleet out for the season with an ACL tear. Chris Paul used to play for the Houston Rockets. The New York Knicks have an open roster spot, the 15th roster spot, and Leon Rose, the president of basketball operations, the top decision maker there, used to be Chris Paul's agent, longtime agent. So look, the Houston Rockets can't sign Chris Paul until January 15th because of the cap rules and all that minutia. But what else? What destination, Dan? What other teams do you see as, you know, maybe this could work out if Chris Paul wanted to continue playing? We know that he wants to stay close to home, which is another reason why the Lakers kind of make sense. I don't know if the Lakers want to have Chris Paul, but I can see a lot of signs pointing in the direction that they might be a good fit.
Yeah, it's tough because the thing that I've said it on the show before, I believe, the thing that I've always liked in this latter part of Chris Paul's career is his, like, you know, I'm the itinerant basketball preacher. Like, I bring the gospel of how to do everything the right way to teams that are unserious and I make them serious. And so, like, he did that with San Antonio, but now San Antonio's 14-6 and they've got 55 guards. And, you know, he did it with the Thunder. And now, you know, the other big story in the league is that they're 21-1 and threatening 73 wins. And, you know, he did it in Phoenix, but now Phoenix is, you know, resurgent and has, you know, their own little like fun fireplug guard in Colin Gillespie, and they're turn. So like somewhere there, I don't know. I don't know that he's the answer in Golden State. It seems like they've got enough ornery old guys right now. But yeah, so I mean, like, and it's hard to see an answer that gets him where, like, he would want to be close to home. So you imagine a Western Conference team, you'd imagine he would not want to spend the season not competing for something, but most of those teams already kind of have the backcourt spots filled up. I think the Knicks are interesting. I think it's notable that pretty quickly after this all started to unfold, Stephen Bondi on the beat for the Knicks beat with the New York Post and Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated both right away drew the line to the Leon Rose connection. And so that's just always, when you see multiple people say those things very quickly, I kind of just always remember that and take note of that. Doesn't mean anything's going to happen there. The Knicks there's been discussions about, do they need a backup point guard? They've just had some issues where Landry Shamet just got hurt. So they're like, the backcourt minutes are a thing there, but also like what you've seen from Chris Paul so far this season, I don't know that how much you can anticipate him being a help, especially a Knicks team right now. Their big problem is that on the defensive end of the court, things not going super hot for the Clippers on the defensive end of the court when Chris Paul was in the court. So I don't know about that. Yeah, I mean, the unfortunate thing is that the answer that made the most sense narratively and from a fit perspective, you know, Lawrence Frank wasn't wrong that there was a natural fit on this roster. You needed a ball handler who could keep things running when Harden was off the floor. You needed somebody else who can set up Kawhi Leonard and those other, and the bigs and the pick and roll. You needed somebody that could limit your turnovers because turnover percentage was a big problem for the Clippers last year. And you needed somebody who was going to be able to be like an organizer on the point on the defensive end too in the second unit. Chris Paul made sense for all of those things. It just didn't work out. And whatever the reasons are, and again, I'm sure we're going to hear plenty of it. I believe Lawrence Frank is on a Zoom with Clippers reporters right now. So who knows what's going to come out of that. We're not able to tap into that right now. But I don't know that there's a great answer for what comes next. I just know that the answer for whatever comes next for the Clippers is probably going to be a lot more losses because this has been ugly and it seems like it's only getting uglier.
Yeah, Dan, I don't think we're going to change the big number to one anytime soon, considering also that they don't own the rights to their upcoming first round pick, because that's going to the Oklahoma City Thunder that are currently 21-1. So unprotected, by the way, unprotected. So, yeah, they don't have any incentive. They don't have any incentive to tank. And they're kind of roster crunch right now with Bradley Beal out for the season, Derrick Jones Jr. out for a month plus. Brooke Lopez is getting coaching decisions over the last 3+ games. Brooke Lopez was kind of their big signing in the offseason. And John Collins, like, bless his heart, he's trying his darndest to keep this ship afloat there with James Harden and Kawhi. Godspeed, everybody in Clipperland right now, because it is a mess, an absolute mess.
Before we get out, I want to give the last word on it to Ty Lue. After they lost to the Mavericks again. Mavericks have been in a lot of trouble this season. They lost to them on Saturday. Ty Lue said, "We're trying a lot of different things. We'll keep trying. There's no next step right now." And then in the next game after that in Miami, they were down by 29 early in the second half, and he benched all his starters. And then they sent Chris Paul home. So yeah, like in terms of what comes next, I don't think Ty Lue has any idea. I don't know that anybody has any idea. And I think that it seems like things are going to get a lot worse before they get better.
Dan, we've got three little numbers from you, just kind of dissecting this corpse that is so far the Clippers season. 30 games underperforming the most in the NBA this year. And actually looked at the numbers. It was like the most on pace to have the most underachieving team, according to preseason projections, in like at least 5 years. So it's not just this season. This is a colossal collapse by the Clippers. It's a lot of season there. Three little numbers. Right after the break on the Clippers season so far and where they go from here. All right, Dan. I did not foresee Lou Will becoming a newsbreaker, but on a show earlier today, I was hanging on every word because he's like, "Hey, man, I'm here in Atlanta. I know a lot of people over there and checking in on the situation." And it seemed eerily similar to the Shams Charania report about like how he was holding people accountable. And that's what ended up being his demise there and being sent home. But Lou Williams, shout out to Lou Williams being a newsbreaker. How about that? Who could have foreseen this, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, when we had that whole conversation about like players becoming the new media, right? Like the Draymond thing. I don't know that I anticipated Lou Williams being part of it. Frankly, it always seemed that Lou Williams was going to have some better ways to spend his time. He had a lot of good ways to spend his time during his career. So I kind of always imagined he would be like, "I don't really need to do this media thing," but he's quite good at it. And yeah, who could possibly be better positioned at the center of this story than Atlanta's own Lou Williams, Atlanta legend, famously, and Clipper legend Lou Williams. You know, like, yeah, it's the concentric circles intersect, and here we go. It's must see stuff.
Well, I want to point out here that on that whole holding players accountable, just a note here, I think Udonis Haslem is kind of the precedent here of like a guy who might not play very much, but carries a lot of weight when he speaks, right? That he has kind of the locker room. And the reason why he has that kind of gravitas and that kind of weight around the locker room is because he's always been there.
Yes.
Always been there. The Clippers haven't had that guy. They could have had it in Chris Paul or DeAndre Jordan or Blake Griffin, and they've chosen every time to part ways. And so that's why I think another ingredient to the why this kind of blew up is that Chris Paul probably didn't have the same sort of ear that Udonis Haslem had, because the Clippers, for various reasons, have decided to not keep that core together over the years. And so there is no jersey hanging in the rafters, and I don't think we're anytime soon that we'll see the CP3. One thing, Bradley Beal gave up three to have Chris Paul. Does Bradley Beal get three back? I don't know. That's speaking of three, we have three little numbers we need to get to, Dan. So your first little number on the Clippers season so far is
101.4. That is how many points per 100 possessions the Clippers are giving up in the half court this season. According to Cleaning the Glass, 101.4 is the 25th ranked half-court defense in the NBA. Since the start of the Kawhi Leonard era in 2019-20, the Clippers had ranked previously in half-court defensive efficiency 5th, 14th, 4th, 14th, 8th, and last season 2nd. This year, they have been worse at getting stops with their set defense than everybody besides the Pelicans, Wizards, Hornets, and Nets. And the things that those teams have in common is that they're terrible. And so are these Clippers. And that's like, you know, it was obvious from Jump Street, right? Opening night, it was like a big wow moment. They gave up 129 points to the Jazz. And it was like, they were down, I think, 30 at half or something like that. And so, the Jazz, you know, Lauri Markkanen's great. Keontae George is having a great season. Like, they're better than I think people thought. But still, that was like an, oh no, something is really wrong if you can't get stops against a team that's expected to be at the top of the lottery positioning. And it just became really clear really quickly, you're going to start Bradley Beal next to James Harden. The defense isn't going to work. But since Bradley Beal went out, the defense has actually gotten worse, even with Chris Dunn in the starting lineup. Chris Dunn, you know, great all defensive team caliber defender. It's just no combination that Ty Lue has been trying, because he's leaning on these older vets or young guys. Like, they're now turned into Kobe Sanders and Kobe Brown and Cam Christie. And they're cycling guys in and out because of the injuries we talked about a little bit earlier. And there's no answer, like no combination he's finding is consistently able to get stops. And the things that this team were great at, like Ivica Zubac, elite defensive rebounder. They were the best defensive rebounding team in the NBA last season. They are down all the way near the bottom of the league in defensive rebounding percentage this year. They've given up second chance points like crazy. They were really good at forcing turnovers, a super aggressive defense at the point of attack. They have been falling down to near the bottom of the league in opponent turnover rate. So if you're not, if you're giving up second chance points and you're not forcing turnovers and you're not stopping the ball at the point of attack and you're not a great help defensive team, like you're starting to run out of ways to be any good on defense. And that was the formula, right? Elite defense, James Harden making everything work, connecting everybody, and then Kawhi Leonard finishing plays. And it's, I think we're finding out, if you don't have that first pillar, that foundational defense, nothing else really matters.
Right, and defense has always been kind of the canary in the coal mine of a coach having the locker room still, right? If your defense is organized and you're willing to rotate and follow the game plan defensively, because defense in the NBA, you know, I think Kevin Arnovitz always, you know, told me this, and I've always believed this, is like 70% of defense is just being in the right spot at the right time. And if you're not in the right spot or the right time, why is that? Is it because you're not listening to the defensive principles, because you don't want to be, because you don't care? Whatever it is, it's more reason that Tyronn Lue and Lawrence Frank, if Tyronn Lue didn't have the finger on the pulse of the team to add Chris Paul to this and waive him after a retirement announcement, sorry, not waive him, but part ways with him after announcing, having this big ceremony to announce that this is his final season. It just seems like Ty Lue doesn't seem to have the locker room if the defense is this bad, or Jeff Van Gundy, who was the architect of the defensive overhaul last year. If it doesn't seem to be registering with the players, then I can see that Steve Ballmer's just like, you know what? Everyone's got to go. I got a clean house. If Lawrence Frank misjudged this locker room and it's been the most disappointing underachieving team of the last 5 years plus, I can see why the defense is kind of the signal, right? That is the canary in the coal mine, that something is horribly wrong in this franchise if they're not willing to rotate, run back on defense, play in transition, or even in the half court, like the number you posted.
Yeah, and your point, the transition defense is even worse. I think they're giving up 141 points per 100 possessions there, dead last in the league in defensive efficiency and transition, which again, old team, disorganized team, not knowing when they need, where they need to be and when. And if you're not good in the half court and you're not good in transition and you're not good at rebounding the ball and you're not good at creating turnovers, then what are you good at? And the answer is not very much right now. Second little number this week is 13.1. That's how much the Clippers' offensive rating has dropped this season. Whenever James Harden is off the floor with the beard on the court, the Clippers are scoring 118.3 points per 100 possessions, according to Cleaning the Glass. That would rank ninth in offensive efficiency over the course of the full season. So when he's been there, even with Kawhi being out for so much, even with all the other struggles, they've still been a top 10 caliber offense. When Harden has sat, that has plummeted to 105.2 points per 100 possessions, which would be several sub-basements below the Dallas Mavericks, who we've talked about a number of times, don't really have a point guard, have struggled a lot to generate points, and are in 30th place in the NBA. So they are worse than the worst offense in the NBA when James Harden is off the floor. Credit where it's due. Listen, James Harden has been like the only bright spot for the Clippers this season. 14th in the NBA in scoring, 26.9 points per game. 5th in the NBA in assists, 8.4 points assists per game. He's scoring more per minute per possession, higher usage rate, higher true shooting percentage than he's had since he was a Rocket, since the last full season that he was in Houston. So this is has been a real turn back the clock situation because they've needed it, frankly. They've needed him to play like Rockets, James Harden. The Clippers, this is a fun one. They're 2-9 on the road this season. One of those wins was an overtime win in Dallas where Harden played 51 minutes and put up a 41-point triple-double. And the other one was in Charlotte where he tied Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikola Jokic for the highest scoring individual performance of this season with 55 points on 26 shots. So like the only time the Clippers have been even decent this season has been when James Harden has been absolutely bananas for them on the offensive end of the court. Estimated plus minus, we talk about that a lot. Taylor Snar's metric over at Dunks and Threes has Harden as the 7th best offensive player in the NBA so far this season. The highest impact offensive players: Jokic, SGA, Giannis, Luka, Donovan Mitchell, and Steph Curry. That's it. So Harden has been that good offensively this season. And they have still been bad offensively when he's off the floor. Injuries, underperformance, age, just not enough shot creation whenever he's not around. Even with Kawhi on the floor, when Harden's off it, they're still scoring at a bottom five level. And at the risk of putting too fine a point on it, if the guy that you have to have on the court to be a good offense is also somebody who, whenever he's on the court, you're a terrible defense, then it's a kind of a tough predicament, and that's where the Clippers find themselves right now.
Yeah, the whole idea of Chris Paul, Bradley Beal, Brooke Lopez, all these additions to the team were to help carry the load when James Harden can't, right? And if the offense can't function properly without James Harden, I could see him just being like, yeah, this ain't for me. I'm out. Like, this is not what I signed up for. And this is something he's done at every stop of the way, beginning with Houston and then Brooklyn and Philly. And then he comes to LA, comes back home, and everything seems to be good until now. And we're seeing the eye rolling in the past week with James Harden. And we now see that Chris Paul has been sent packing. So here's a number for you, Dan. The number one lineup without James Harden on the floor in terms of usage, minutes for the Clippers, is this season. It's Chris Paul, Chris Dunn, John Collins, Kawhi Leonard, and Brooke Lopez. That seems like a pretty solid lineup, like considering the names in that lineup. You know, you got Hall of Famers, you got Defensive Player of the Year candidates, pretty good. One of the best five shooting big men in the league, and Brooke Lopez, great cutter, and Chris Dunn. Offensive rating for that group, 78.
Oh, so, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's bad. So maybe Chris Paul being sent packing will fix that. 78 offensive rating when the team's like average is 110, somewhere around there. The NBA average around 110. It's 78 points every 100 possessions, according to PBPstats.com. So just something to note there. Yeah, if things don't get better, I'm just going to note that the trade deadline's about 2 months and change. And James Harden, if he's this upset now, if that doesn't turn around, their ability to score without James Harden, or if he gets banged up here and the tailspin continues, knowing James Harden's past, I don't think we can rule out the possibility that he just says, I'm done with this.
It's at least possible that he already has. Here's where we note that on Monday, James Harden played 20 minutes against the Heat and the Clippers were outscored by 39 points in those 20 minutes. And when they went down by, I think it was 29 points early in the third quarter, Ty Lue yanked all his starters. Every other starter got back on the floor except for James Harden. That's just worth noting. Let's keep an eye on that one because Operation Shutdown may well have already begun. Brings us to our third little number, because you know who they saw when they were in Miami is an old friend. Our third little number this week is 20th, 20. That is the current rank in Dunks and Threes estimated plus minus metric of one Norman Powell. Entering Wednesday's games, Powell sits 20th in the league in that catch-all metric. He's adding an estimated 3.9 points per 100 possessions to his team's net rating when he's on the court. The team that he's adding that to is notably not the Los Angeles Clippers, because they traded Powell this summer in a three-team deal that effectively allowed LA to split up his salary slot into John Collins and Bradley Beal to add some more depth to the roster and to also avoid having to make a decision on whether they're going to pay Norman Powell when he hits free agency this coming offseason. Beal, it was a disaster. It didn't look good on the court, and then he got hurt and is done for the season. Collins has been fine. Norman Powell is averaging 25 points a game on 51, 46, 88 shooting splits for a top 10 offense, which has produced, and he has produced, according to EPM, like a top 20 player in the league. This would also make him the highest ranked player in EPM on the Clippers. James Harden is 25th and Kawhi Leonard is 29th. So a move that made sense on the balance sheet and on the whiteboard of, we can move this. We don't have to worry about the future. You know, we're trying to keep our powder dry for 2027 and think about how we're going to refill the roster at that point and clean slate. And Norm's been awesome for us. And maybe he even should have been an all-star last year and has been a fantastic player for us, plug and play offense. You know what? We can replace that on the cheap with Brad Beal. We can get another big guy in here and John Collins to give us some versatility and more athleticism. And it's going to all work out for us. It hasn't worked out very well for them. And
Ron Howard voice.
Ron Howard. Narrator. It has not worked out well for them. Norm Powell, might get that all-star berth in the Eastern Conference this season. And the Clippers problems, as he mentioned during his post-game press conference of the night, those are no longer his problems to worry about. And so he just kind of keeps pressing on, and the Clippers have a Norm Powell-sized hole in their offense, it looks like.
It just seems like Murphy's Law is happening for the Clippers, that anything bad that can happen is going to happen. I think, Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar was like, it's actually anything that can happen will happen eventually. So let's just say that Norm Powell becoming an all-star at his age, 32, leaving the Clippers in a salary exchange with John Collins and becoming his first all-star bid upon leaving the Clippers is just, it's adding insult to injury at this point. Did we mention that the Intuit Dome is the host for the All-Star this year? So if Norm Powell is an All-Star at Intuit Dome, that'll be interesting. Also interesting, what happens with Chris Paul from here on out, man? Like, does LeBron call him up and say, hey, just sit tight till January 19th. We can add you, get your body right. But then incorporating Chris Paul after a month out of the season, I have a hard time getting back into the gym after like a week out, like playing NBA games at age 40 after being away for a couple weeks. Who knows how this is going to play out, but just wanted to put it out there. The Knicks are interesting. The Lakers are interesting. Trades, I don't know. OKC, does OKC kind of like throw salt in the wound of the fact that they own the Clippers pick and Chris Paul wants to win a championship. Couldn't do it in Clipperland, but they have 15 roster spots. Usman Jang is someone that they could trade potentially to the Clippers to. It's all very complicated with the cap rules, but the Thunder don't have a 15th roster spot open, so it would get kind of tricky and complicated to make that happen. But
I will say, though, narratively, that would be really satisfying, right? When did things really start to kind of turn around in OKC? It's like they had to kind of put the end to the roster, the era with Russ and PG, when PG goes to LA to be part of the Kawhi deal. And Chris Paul comes in and that team's supposed to tank and be awful and he gets them to the playoffs. And that's like SGA talks a lot about that. Like, that is a mentor figure for him. That is somebody that has, you know, had an important role in his kind of development, seeing the way it's done. The idea of Chris Paul going back there, also when Hurricane Katrina hit in New Orleans, where did Chris Paul go and sort of the interregnum that saved basketball a little bit there that led to eventually Oklahoma City, it was where the Hornets were. That's interesting. That's pretty interesting. That feels almost like a little too cute for Sam Presti to do. I don't think he operates that way, but that would be interesting. That'd be fun.
Very interesting. And we're already halfway through the season. So the idea that he would want to stay home in LA, he was already going to be away from the team for half the games in the rest of the regular season. So I get that as a father, he has said, that he wants to be home more since he's been on the road for his, you know, for the entirety of his adult life here. He'd like to be closer to home. But now that you're looking at, hey, 6 months of this, can he spend on the road here, given that the Clippers were already going to be on the road for the next 4 months, two out of the next 4 months? So it makes it a little bit more palatable, the idea of just being a rental for a team and trying to win that championship. I think also Charlotte, I don't think it's a coincidence he made the announcement when he was in North Carolina. And the team does need veteran leadership. They don't kind of have a Chris Paul figure in that locker room at this point. And so I do think that's interesting. OKC, and as I mentioned, those three teams, New York, Houston, and the Lakers. KOC has also mentioned the Minnesota Timberwolves as a team that could use him. I don't know. Mike Conley seems to be that guy up there. But hey, stranger things have happened, like sending a guy home on a road trip in December after you celebrated his final season retirement tour. Just, it's shocking, Dan. It really is. Mark Spears at ESPN and Antscape said this is one of the most astonishing things that he has seen since covering the league, and he's a Hall of Fame journalist. So
yeah, been doing it for a while.
You know, so we'll see how it plays out from here. But I want to give a shout out to Emmy and Ryan, who have been working on the show today. A lot of different elements to pull in short order. So thanks so much for them to do this. And you know what? It's not Thanksgiving. We're already done with Thanksgiving, but I'm giving thanks to them. Thanks so much for doing that. Thanks to all the listeners out there. Please subscribe to The Big Number wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure you hit that subscribe button on YouTube. And please be nice to each other and enjoy your family. Enjoy home while you can before the Clippers send you there. Okay.
If you're going to get sent home, you might as well enjoy being there.
That's right. All right. Thanks, Dan. Until next time on The Big Number.